Chapter 41. Capacity. But what makes you think I have anything particular to talk about? Though she kept the even tone of light intercourse, the question was framed in a way to remind him that his good offices were unsought, and for a moment Selden was checked by it. The situation between them was one which could have been cleared up only by a sudden explosion of feeling, and their whole training and habit of mind were against the chances of such an explosion. Selden's calmness seemed rather to harden into resistance, and Miss Bart's into a surface of glittering irony, as they faced each other from the opposite comers of one of Mrs. Hatch's elephantine sofas. The sofa in question, and the apartment peopled by its monstrous mates, served at length to suggest the turn of Selden's reply. Gertie told me that you were acting as Mrs. Hatch's secretary, and I knew she was anxious to hear how you were getting on. Miss Bart received this explanation without perceptible softening. Why didn't she look me up herself then? She asked. Because, as you didn't send her your address, she was afraid of being importunate. Selden continued with a smile, you see no such scruples restrained me. But then I haven't as much to risk if I incur your displeasure. Lily answered a smile. Why, you haven't incurred it as yet, but I have an idea that you are going to. That rests with you, doesn't it? You see, my initiative doesn't go beyond putting myself at your disposal. But in what capacity? What am I to do with you? She asked in the same light tone. Selden again glanced about Mrs. Hatch's drawing room. Then he said, with a decision which he seemed to have gathered from this final inspection, you are to let me take you away from here. Lily flushed at the suddenness of the attack. Then she stiffened under it and said coldly, and may I ask where you mean me to go? Back to Gertie in the first place, if you will. The essential thing is that it should be away from here. The unusual harshness of his tone might have shown her how much the words cost him. But she was in no state to measure his feelings, while her own were in a flame of revolt. To neglect her, perhaps even to avoid her, at a time when he had most need of her friends, and then suddenly and unwarrantably, to break into her life with this strange assumption of authority, was to rouse in her every instinct of pride and self-defense. I am very much obliged to you, she said, for taking such an interest in my plans. But I am quite contented where I am, and have no intention of leaving. Selden had risen, and was standing before her in an attitude of uncontrollable expectancy. That simply means that you don't know where you are, he exclaimed. Lily rose also, with a quick flash of anger. If you have come here to say disagreeable things about Mrs. Hatch, it is only with your relation to Mrs. Hatch that I am concerned. My relation to Mrs. Hatch is one I have no reason to be ashamed of. She has helped me to earn a living when my old friends were quite resigned to seeing me starve. Nonsense. Starvation is not the only alternative. You know you can always find a home with Gertie till you are independent again. You show such an intimate acquaintance with my affairs that I suppose you mean till my aunt's legacy is paid? I do mean that. Gertie told me of it, Selden acknowledged without embarrassment. He was too much in earnest now to feel any false constraint in speaking his mind. But Gertie does not happen to know, Miss Bart rejoined, that I owe every penny of that legacy. Good God! Selden exclaimed, startled out of his composure by the abruptness of the statement. Every penny of it, and more too, Lily repeated. And you now perhaps see why I prefer to remain with Mrs. Hatch, rather than take advantage of Gertie's kindness. I have no money left, except my small income, and I must earn something more to keep myself alive. Selden hesitated a moment, then he rejoined in a quieter tone. But with your income, and Gertie, since you allow me to go so far into the details of the situation, you and she could surely contrive a life together which would put you beyond the need of having to support yourself. Gertie, I know, is eager to make such an arrangement, and would be quite happy in it, but I should not, Miss Bart interposed. There are many reasons why it would be neither kind to Jordy nor wise for myself. She paused a moment, and as he seemed to await a farther explanation, added with a quick lift of her head, "You will perhaps excuse me from giving you these reasons." "I have no claim to know them," Selden answered, ignoring her tone. "No claim to offer any comment or suggestion beyond the one I have already made. And my right to make that is simply the universal right of a man to enlighten a woman when he sees her unconsciously placed in a false position." Lily smiled. I suppose," she rejoined, "that by a false position you mean one outside of what we call society. But you must remember that I had been excluded from those sacred precincts long before I met Mrs. Hatch. As far as I can see, there is very little real difference in being inside or out, and I remember your once telling me that it was only those inside who took the difference seriously." As he had not been without intention in making this allusion to their memorable talk at Bellomont, and she waited with an odd tremor of the nerves to see what response it would bring. But the result of the experiment was disappointing. Selden did not allow the illusion to deflect him from his point. He merely said with completer fullness of emphasis, "The question of being inside or out is, as you say, a small one, and it happens to have nothing to do with the case, except insofar as Mrs. Hatch's desire to be inside may put you in the position I call false." In spite of the moderation of his tone, each word he spoke had the effect of confirming Lily's resistance. The very apprehensions he aroused hardened her against him. As he had been on the alert for the note of personal sympathy, for any sign of recovered power over him, and his attitude of sober impartiality, the absence of all response to her appeal turned her hurt pride to blind resentment of his interference. The conviction that he had been sent by Jordy, and that, whatever straits he conceived her to be in, he would never voluntarily have come to her aid, strengthened her resolve not to admit him a hair's breadth farther into her confidence. However doubtful she might feel her situation to be, she would rather persist in darkness than owe her enlightenment to Selden. "I don't know," she said, when he had ceased to speak, "why you imagine me to be situated as you describe. But as you have always told me that the sole object of a bringing up like mine was to teach a girl to get what she wants, why not assume that that is precisely what I am doing?" The smile with which she summed up her case was like a clear barrier raised against farther confidences. Its brightness held him at such a distance that he had a sense of being almost out of hearing as he rejoined, "I am not sure that I have ever called you a successful example of that kind of bringing up." Her color rose a little at the implication, but she steeled herself with a light laugh. Wait a little longer, give me a little more time before you decide." And as he wavered before her, still watching for a break in the impenetrable front she presented, "Don't give me up. I may still do credit to my training," she affirmed. "Look at those spangles, Miss Bart, every one of 'em sewed on crooked." The tall forewoman, a pinched perpendicular figure, dropped the condemned structure of wire and net on the table at Lily's side, and passed on to the next figure in the line. There were 20 of them in the workroom, their fagged profiles, under-exaggerated hair, bowed in the harsh north light above the utensils of their art. For it was something more than an industry, surely, this creation of ever-varied settings for the face of fortunate womanhood. Their own faces were sallow with the unwholesomeness of hot air and sedentary toil, rather than with any actual signs of want. They were employed in a fashionable millinery establishment, and were fairly well clothed and well paid, but the youngest among them was as dull and colorless as the middle-aged. In the whole workroom there was only one skin beneath which the blood still visibly played, and that now burned with vexation as Miss Bart, under the lash of the forewoman's comment, began to strip the hat frame of its overlapping spangles. To Jordy Farish's hopeful spirit, a solution appeared to have been reached when she remembered how beautifully Lily could trim hats. instances of young lady milliners establishing themselves under fashionable patronage, and imparting to their creations that indefinable touch which the professional hand can never give, had flattered Gertie's visions of the future, and convinced even Lily that her separation from Mrs. Norma Hatch need not reduce her to dependence on her friends. The parting had occurred a few weeks after Selden's visit, and would have taken place sooner had it not been for the resistance set up in Lily by his ill-starred offer of advice. The sense of being involved in a transaction she would not have cared to examine too closely had soon afterward defined itself in the light of a hint from Mr. Stancy that, if she saw them through, she would have no reason to be sorry. The implication that such loyalty would meet with a direct reward had hastened her flight, and flung her back, ashamed and penip 297 greater than 10, on the broad bosom of Gertie's sympathy. She did not, however, propose to lie there prone, and Gertie's inspiration about the hats at once revived her hopes of profitable activity. Here was, after all, something that her charming listless hands could really do. She had no doubt of their capacity for knotting a ribbon, or placing a flower to advantage. And of course only these finishing touches would be expected of her. Subordinate fingers, blunt, gray, needle-pricked fingers, would prepare the shapes and stitch the linings, while she presided over the charming little front shop, a shop all white panels, mirrors, and moss-green hangings where her finished creations, hats, wreaths, aigrettes and the rest, perched on their stands like birds just poising for flight. But at the very outset of Gertie's campaign this vision of the green and white shop had been dispelled. Other young ladies of fashion had been thus set up, selling their hats by the mere attraction of a name and the reputed knack of tying a bow, but these privileged beings could command a faith in their powers materially expressed by the readiness to pay their shop rent and advance a handsome sum for current expenses. Where was Lily to find such support? And even could it have been found, how were the ladies on whose approval she depended to be induced to give her their patronage? Gertie learned that whatever sympathy her friend's case might have excited a few months since had been imperiled, if not lost, by her association with Mrs. Hatch. Once again, Lily had withdrawn from an ambiguous situation in time to save her self-respect, but too late for public vindication. Freddie Van Osburgh was not to marry Mrs. Hatch. He had been rescued at the 11th hour, some said, by the efforts of Gus Treanor and Rosedale, and dispatched to Europe with old Ned Van Alstyne. But the risk he had run would always be ascribed to Miss Bart's connivance, and would somehow serve as a summing up and corroboration of the vague general distrust of her. It was a relief to those who had hung back from her to find themselves thus justified, and they were inclined to insist a little on her connection with the Hatch case in order to show that they had been right. Gertie's quest, at any rate, brought up against a solid wall of resistance. And even when Carrie Fisher, momentarily penp 298 greater than 19 for her share in the Hatch affair, joined her efforts to Miss Farish's, they met with no better success. Gertie had tried to veil her failure in tender ambiguities. But Carrie, always the soul of candor, put the case squarely to her friend. "I went straight to Judy Treanor. S. He has fewer prejudices than the others, and besides she's always hated Bertha Dorset. But what have you done to her, Lily?" At the very first word about giving you a start she flamed out about some money you'd got from Gus. "I never knew her so hot before. You know she'll let him do anything but spend money on his friends. The only reason she's decent to me now is that she knows I'm not hard up. He speculated for you, you say? Well, what's the harm? He had no business to lose." "He didn't lose? Then what on earth?" "But I never could understand you, Lily." The end of it was that, after anxious inquiry and much deliberation, Mrs. Fisher and Gertie, for once oddly united in their effort to help their friend, decided on placing her in the workroom of me, Regina's renowned millinery establishment. Even this arrangement was not effected without considerable negotiation, for me, Regina had a strong prejudice against untrained assistants, and was induced to yield only by the fact that she owed the patronage of Mrs. Bry and Mrs. Gormer to Carrie Fisher's influence. As he had been willing from the first to employ Lily in the showroom. As a displayer of hats, a fashionable beauty might be a valuable asset. But to this suggestion Miss Bart opposed a negative which Gertie emphatically supported, while Mrs. Fisher, inwardly unconvinced, but resigned to this latest proof of Lily's unreason, agreed that perhaps in the end it would be more useful that she should learn the trade. To Regina's workroom Lily was therefore committed by her friends, and there Mrs. Fisher left her with a sigh of relief, while Gertie's watchfulness continued to hover over her at a distance. Lily had taken up her work early in January. It was now 2 months later, and she was still being rebuked for her inability to sew spangles on a hat frame. As she returned to her work she heard a titter pass down the tables. She knew she was an object of criticism and amusement to the other workwomen. They were, of course, aware of her history. The exact situation of every girl in the room was known, and freely discussed by all the others, but the knowledge did not produce in them any awkward sense of class distinction. It merely explained why her untutored fingers were still blundering over the rudiments of the trade. Lily had no desire that they should recognize any social difference in her, but as he had hoped to be received as their equal, and perhaps before long, to show herself their superior by a special deftness of touch, and it was humiliating to find that, after 2 months of drudgery, she still betrayed her lack of early training. Remote was the day when she might aspire to exercise the talents she felt confident of possessing. Only Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.